A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, four inspiring and amazing Latter-day Saint women. I'm going to tell you their stories. The first, Jane Elizabeth Manning James, was born in 1822, one of five children. She was part of a free African American couple who were living in Connecticut. This was, of course, a time when most all African Americans in the United States were slaves, but her family was free. In 1841, as a young adult, she joined the New Canaan Congregational Church. 18 months later, in the winter of 1842 and 43, she and several of her family members were baptized into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Jane and other family members soon wanted to join the Latter-day Saints in Nauvoo, so they traveled from Connecticut to New York, planning to travel on steamboats and canals as much as they could, and the rest of the time walk to make their way to Nauvoo. However, they were denied boat passage because they were black, so they had to walk the entire distance, many, many hundreds of miles. Upon reaching Peoria, Illinois, local authorities questioned the Mannings, thinking they might be fugitive slaves, and demanded their paperwork to prove their free status, which, of course, they were able to produce. Being black at a time when slavery abounded made life even more difficult for Jane and her family in the 1800s. By the time Jane reached Nauvoo, she had walked 1,082 miles since departing from Connecticut. All this to find the headquarters of her new church and faith. Once in Nauvoo, Jane quickly developed a friendship with Joseph and Emma Smith. She lived with them, worked in their household as her first job in Nauvoo. Many, many years later about this experience, when she was interviewed about being LDS and about knowing Joseph Smith, Joseph Smith, she said, quote, "I did know the prophet Joseph Smith. He was the finest man I ever saw on earth. I was certain he was a prophet because I just knew it." Through conversations with Joseph and his mother, Lucy Mack, Jane learned more about the Book of Mormon and its translation. She married Isaac James, who had left New Jersey as a free black convert to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Isaac had also traveled to Nauvoo. They, along with Jane's son, Sylvester, left Nauvoo in 1846 to head west with the Saints, going to Salt Lake City. In June of that year, Jane and Isaac's son, Silas, was born. The next year, the family crossed the plains, arriving in Salt Lake City in the fall of 1847. Isaac and Jane had six additional children, only two of whom outlived Jane. She lived to the ripe old age of 95. More about the rest of her life, though. As with other early settlers to the Salt Lake Valley, Jane and Isaac worked hard to provide for their family. Isaac worked as a laborer and an occasional coachman for Brigham Young, and Jane spun cloth, made clothing, and did laundry as she had done in Nauvoo. Marital tension led Isaac and Jane to divorce in 1870. Jane later had a brief 2-year marriage to a former slave, Frank Perkins, but soon resumed single life as a single parent and grandparent. Financial need and the deaths of 3 children caused Jane to return to work. She made and sold soap while 2 of her sons hired out as laborers. In 1890, after 20 years of being away, Isaac returned to Salt Lake City, renewed his church membership, and formed a friendly relationship with Jane. When he died a year later, the funeral service was held in Jane's home. Throughout the difficulties of her life, Jane remained committed to her faith in the gospel and teachings, and she valued her membership in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She donated to temple construction, participated in the Relief Society and Young Ladies Retrenchment Society. Jane experienced spiritual gifts that she described in her journal, including visions, dreams, healing by faith, and speaking in tongues. About her gifts and her testimony, she said, quote, "My faith in the gospel of Jesus Christ is as strong today, nay, it is, if possible, stronger than it was the day I was first baptized," close quote. Between 1884 and 1904, Jane periodically contacted church leaders, John Taylor, Wilford Woodruff, Zena Young, Joseph F. Smith, and asked permission to receive her temple endowment and to be sealed. At that time, Black Latter-day Saint men and women weren't allowed by policy to participate in most temple ordinances. But in 1888, her stake president, Angus Cannon, authorized Jane to perform baptisms for the dead for her deceased loved ones, her family. Although she didn't receive her own temple endowment or further family sealings during her lifetime, those have since been performed for her. They happened in 1979. Jane died on April 16th of 1908 at the age of 95. A single mother of 8 in Salt Lake City, Jane always remained faithful to her Latter-day Saint church. When she died, an article about her was published in the Deseret News, which said in part, quote, "Few persons were more noted for faith and faithfulness than was Jane Manning James. And though of humble means, she numbered friends and acquaintances by the hundreds," close quote. The next inspiring and amazing Latter-day Saint that I'd like to talk about is far more recent. I'm talking about Tora Bright. She was born in 1987, is an Australian Latter-day Saint and a world champion snowboarder. She won the gold medal in halfpipe in snowboarding in the 2010 Olympic Games in Vancouver, Canada. She also won the silver medal in halfpipe at the 2014 Olympics in Sochi, Japan. In 2007, she won the gold medal superpipe in the Aspen X Games. In 2009, she won the gold medal superpipe in the Aspen X Games. In 2006, she won the silver medal in superpipe at the Aspen X Games. In 2008, she also won the silver medal in the superpipe Winter X Games. In 2015, she won bronze medals in both the superpipe and halfpipe in the Aspen X Games. And also, she won a bronze medal in 2013 in slopestyle. She, in a TV interview, said this wonderful statement, quote, "I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For me, it's just a way of life. I don't drink, smoke, drink tea or coffee, or have sex before marriage. I've never drunk or smoked. Sometimes I'll go out to dance and stay up late, but I always drive myself home at the end of the night. Close quote. What an inspiring statement by a wonderful young lady. The next wonderful person that I'd like to talk about is going to be on the other side of the break. So stay tuned for another inspiring Latter-day Saint women biography. I'll be right back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today on Mother's Day. Today, we're talking about inspiring and amazing Latter-day Saint women. We have already showcased African-American Latter-day Saint Jane Elizabeth Manning James from the 1800s and Australian Latter-day Saint snowboarding champion Tora Bright. Now, next, we're going to talk about another amazing Latter-day Saint who's, of course, contemporary, Hannah Clayson Smith, is a U.S. attorney. She's currently with the law firm of Scher and Jaffe. She's a senior fellow at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and an International Center for Law and Religious Studies fellow. She's also participated in many, many events at Brigham Young University from whence she graduated. She's a member of the board of directors of the Religious Freedom Institute. She was raised in California. If you're thinking to yourself, that sounds like a really familiar name. Well, she's the sister of Jane Clayson, now Jane Clayson Johnson, who was locally famous first at KSL radio and then TV, and then went on to a wonderful career back east as a national TV anchor. Today, we're talking about her about Hannah Clayson Smith, who's the sister of Jane Clayson. Hannah earned a bachelor's degree from the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton before attending law school at BYU's J. Reuben Clark School of Law. During law school, she was elected to the Order of the Coif, which is quite an honor, and served as executive editor of the Law Review. She was a missionary for the church in Switzerland, which also covered parts of France at the time. Following law school, she clerked for then Third Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Samuel Alito. Next, she clerked at the U.S. Supreme Court for Justice Clarence Thomas, and then returned in 2006 for a second clerkship with Judge Alito, who was at that point on the Supreme Court. She practiced law at the very impressive law firms in Washington, D.C. of Williams & Connolly and Sidley Austin. Her legal practice focuses on appellate litigation. She has been part of the legal team in connection with landmark U.S. Supreme Court victories. You probably heard of the Hobby Lobby case. Well, that was one in which she was involved. In 2017, she testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee in support of Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Her testimony reviewed some of the things that Gorsuch had done and included information about two of the clients that the firm that she used to work for, the Beckett Fund, had been involved with, Little Sisters of the Poor and Hobby Lobby. In 2014, she was awarded the BYU Alumni Achievement Award. She was awarded the J. Reuben Clark Law Society's Women in Law Leadership Award. In 2018, she was awarded the James Madison Award from the Center for Constitutional Studies. She served on the Brigham Young University Law School's Board of Advisors, as well as on the Deseret News Editorial Advisory Board, and she was also part of the inaugural panel of Stanford Law School's Religious Freedom Clinic. This inspiring Latter-day Saint woman is married to John Smith, who's also an attorney and who also clerked for Justice Alito. They have four children. The final of the four Latter-day Saint women that I wanted to showcase brings us back to the 1800s. Eliza Roxy Snow was born in 1804 and is one of the most well-known and exceptional Latter-day Saint women of the 1800s. She was an exceptional in many, many ways as a poet, as an historian, and as a scriptorian. Eliza R. Snow was the second general president of the Relief Society of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She reestablished the Relief Society in 1866 in Utah Territory after a hiatus, which followed after Joseph Smith was martyred in Nauvoo. She was also the sister, of course, of Lorenzo Snow, the church's fifth president. She was born in Massachusetts and part of a large family that eventually left New England and settled on a new farm in Western Reserve Valley in Mantua Township of Portage County, Ohio. The Snow family valued learning and saw that each of their children had educational opportunities. This worked very, very well for the bright and gregarious Eliza R. Snow. Eliza's Baptist parents welcomed a variety of religious believers into their home. In 1828, Eliza and her parents joined Alexander Campbell's Christian Restorationist movement, the Disciples of Christ. In 1831, when Joseph Smith and the Latter-day Saints took up residence in Hiram, Ohio, just 4 miles from Eliza Snow and her family's farm, she took a strong interest in the movement. And Eliza R. Snow and her mother joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints quite early on. Upon their arrival in Kirtland, the headquarters of the church, Eliza R. Snow donated her inheritance, which was a fairly large sum, towards the building of the Kirtland Temple. In appreciation, the building committee gave her title to a valuable plot of land that was situated close to the temple. This was quite an amazing thing for her. And here, Eliza taught school for the Smiths family and many others, and she was an influential and interesting person who taught many of the children for the Latter-day Saints at that point in time. As things got worse for the Latter-day Saints, Eliza R. Snow moved west with her family in the body of the church, first to Adamantayaman, a short distance from Missouri, and then to Nauvoo. In a biography a little bit later on, a lady by the name of Alice Merrill Horn wrote that she overheard Eliza R. Snow talking about how she was brutally beaten and abused by 8 Missourians who were part of a mob. And Eliza R. Snow believed that that left her unable to have children. Later, according to Alice Merrill Horn, who was the source for that story, Joseph Smith, upon hearing her story, hearing Eliza's story, promised Eliza Roxy Snow that she would still have eternal children and in the next life be a mother in Zion. She was an amazing woman, known for her poetry and for her hymns. She, of course, penned the famous hymn, Invocation or Eternal Father and Mother, which we now know as O My Father. It was written soon after the death of her father and just over a year after the death of Joseph Smith. She said that she learned about the concept of a heavenly mother from Joseph Smith. Eliza Arsenault also wrote the hymns, Great is the Lord, How Great the Wisdom and the Love, The Time is Far Spent, Though Deepening Trials, Behold the Great Redeemer Die, and Truth Reflects Upon Our Senses. Eliza Arsenault died in Salt Lake City. She was buried in the family cemetery of Brigham Young. These are four inspiring Latter-day Saint women on this Mother's Day, on which we honor all mothers. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.